In the ancient Near East, dreams were considered a way to receive divine communication and even to predict the future. In the Joseph story, there are three pairs of dreams: to Joseph in Genesis 37, to the cupbearer and the baker in Genesis 40, and to Pharaoh in Genesis 41. The dreams come in pairs to show that God is determined in what will occur. God uses these dreams to show that he is ultimately sovereign over human history and destiny. Today, we're going to look at these three sets of dreams and conclude by seeing some insights in Hebrew, specifically with Pharaoh's dream. So join me today for the episode of All Things Apostolic. In our last episode, we discussed how Joseph's brothers hate him. This is prompted by several things, such as his tattling and favoritism from his father, but it is also due to the dual dreams that Joseph has and then unfortunately shares with his family. Interestingly, Joseph's dream is the first one in the Bible in which God does not speak. In his first dream, Joseph and his brothers are binding sheaves in the field. His sheaf arises and stands upright, while his brother's sheaves bow down to him. And we know that this prophecy is fulfilled after Joseph becomes a leader in Egypt. In a second dream, the sun, moon, and stars bow down to him. Basically, both dreams refer to Joseph rising to a level of prominence above his brothers, in which they will show obeisance to him. With both dreams having the same meaning, it reaffirms that it will happen. We know that the brothers finally take action against Joseph by throwing him in a pit. The Hebrew word is bor. It can refer to a pit, well, or cistern. So this first phase of Joseph's life is impacted by dreams and by a pit. In his next phase as a slave, his life again takes a dramatic turn due to a pit and dreams. Joseph gets removed from Potiphar's house and thrown in a dungeon. Interestingly, the word translated as dungeon is the same Hebrew word bor. So when Joseph is originally thrown into a bor by his brothers, it's probably a small dry cistern. But when Joseph is thrown into a bor by Potiphar, it's probably a large underground cistern or dungeon. Ancient cisterns could be quite large and perhaps used as a dungeon. Notice that the dreams in the pit early in his life led to a transition. And here again, in a pit, Joseph is going to encounter dreams that will eventually lead to another dramatic change in his life. The chief cupbearer and the chief baker are imprisoned with Joseph. Both roles of cupbearer and baker were important in ancient times because they had close access to Pharaoh, and the king had to be careful who he trusted because being poisoned was a very real risk. The cupbearer was often wealthy and influential, and even sometimes a confidant of the king. The chief cupbearer tells his dream to Joseph first. There is a vine with three branches. It buds and blossoms shoot forth, and the clusters bring forth ripe grapes. He presses the grapes into Pharaoh's cup and gives it to Pharaoh. Joseph predicts that the chief cupbearer will regain his position within 3 days. Then the chief baker tells his dream, in which three white baskets on his head are filled with delicious things that the birds consume. Joseph predicts that he will be hanged in 3 days and birds will eat his flesh. The chief baker probably did something particularly egregious to earn such a defiling type of death rather than a typical burial. Now, after interpreting the cupbearer's dream, Joseph asks the cupbearer to remember him when all goes well with him. Joseph even lets him know that he's been placed there unjustly. And you would think that the cupbearer would have felt some connection to Joseph because he was probably also wrongly put there. But the cupbearer forgets about Joseph. This is not just a mental forgetfulness, but it's really a moral lapse as well. And this ingratitude prefigures the later national experience of the Israelites when there is a Pharaoh who no longer remembers Joseph and no longer treats the Israelites with gratitude. So Joseph's life has had exaltation by being the favored son to humiliation by being put in the pit and sold into slavery. He experiences exaltation by being elevated in Potiphar's house, only to experience humiliation again when he is wrongfully put in a dungeon. So the plot of the Joseph story has been building, and it is set to climax for a third and final exaltation of his position in Pharaoh's palace. Genesis 41 recounts the story of Pharaoh's dream. The dream is actually told three separate times, first by the narrator of the story, second by Pharaoh, and third by Joseph, but his is very brief. There are some hints in the text that help us to understand the dream. Verse 8 tells us that Pharaoh is very troubled after having the dream. Now, interestingly, there is a grammatical problem in the Hebrew, in the original Hebrew, in verse 8, that some of the English translations have tried to smooth over. A literal translation from the Hebrew reads, "Pharaoh told them his dream, but no one could interpret them for Pharaoh." So notice that the word dream is singular, but the pronoun them is plural, and it's grammatically inconsistent. Pharaoh told them his dream, singular, but no one could interpret them, plural. The King James Version does a good job and maintains the correct singular translation of dream, but there are many English translations that try to smooth out the grammar by saying that Pharaoh told them his dreams. The NIV, ESV, NASB, and CSB are examples of English Bibles that translate the Hebrew word dream into dreams to smooth out the grammar. And it may seem like a small thing, but it affects the nuance of the story because, as we know, there are two parts that are really only one dream. Pharaoh calls all of the magicians and wise men of Egypt and tells them his dream, but none can interpret it. I've always thought this was interesting because, I don't know, they could have concocted some type of interpretation in order to avoid making him angry. Were they full of integrity that they would only venture to offer a meaning if they knew that they were 100% right? Or because they were afraid of what would happen if they were wrong? Did God intervene to be sure that none of them provided an explanation? It's interesting that none, not one, could offer an interpretation. Now the chief cupbearer finally remembers Joseph, and for the next several verses, the chief cupbearer tells the story of what happened in the dungeon. Based on the cupbearer's story, Pharaoh calls for Joseph from the dungeon. Pharaoh tells him his dream, and then Joseph interprets it. Joseph tells Pharaoh, "The dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do." The magicians and wise men can't interpret Pharaoh's dream, but Joseph is able to. Now, the writer gives us a clue in the Hebrew to help us recognize that Joseph is right. And the writer uses something as simple as adjectives. Through the writer's very careful selection of adjectives, the audience is clued in that it's only one dream, and Joseph later makes this clear when he interprets it. Remember that the dream is told three times by the narrator or the writer, as Pharaoh experiences it, by Pharaoh to Joseph, and then by Joseph when he interprets it. And the differences between them in the use of adjectives are significant. So let's look at the narrator's version in chapter 41, verses 1 through 7. I'm going to go with a more literal rendering to make the word choice really clear. "And behold, out of the Nile came up seven cows, fine-looking and fat of flesh, and they fed among the reeds. And behold, seven other cows came up after them out of the Nile, bad-looking and thin of flesh, and stood by the cows on the bank of the Nile. And the cows, bad-looking and thin of flesh, ate up the seven cows, fine-looking and fat. Then Pharaoh awoke." The Bible says, continues, "And he slept and dreamed a second, And behold, seven heads of grain came up on one stalk, fat and good. And behold, seven thin heads, and blighted by the east wind, sprang up after them. And the thin heads devoured the fat and full. Now, in looking at our chart, the good cows and the good grain are side by side for comparison, and the bad cows and the bad grain are side by side for comparison. Each time an adjective is mentioned for one of them in the story, it is added into the appropriate column. So notice in the far left column the adjectives for the good cows. They are fine looking and fat of flesh. Those adjectives are used twice. The good grain is also described twice with the same adjective, fat. So the adjective fat describes the good cows and the good grain. Then the bad cows and the bad grain are both described by the adjective thin. So notice the pattern that the writer or narrator is repeating the same adjective fat to describe the good cows and good grain, and then uses the same adjective thin to describe the bad cows and bad grain. So for the original audience hearing or reading the story in Hebrew, they would have picked up on the repetition and figured that it provided a clue that there is a connection between the two stories. Now, in case you are thinking this is just coincidental and not intentional, let's look at Pharaoh's account in verses 17 through 24. He sees seven cows, fat of flesh and fine-looking, feeding among the reeds. Then he sees seven other cows come up after them that are poor and very bad-looking and thin flesh. And the thin, bad cows eat up the first fat cows. Then he sees seven heads come up on one stalk, full and good. Then seven heads, withered and small and blighted by the east wind, spring up after them. And the small heads devour the seven good heads. Now notice in the chart that the Hebrew adjectives used to describe the good cows and the good grain do not have even a single adjective in common. And we see this for the bad cows and the bad grain also. There's no pattern. Not a single Hebrew adjective is the same. And this indicates that Pharaoh is oblivious to any type of connection. After Pharaoh tells Joseph these details, Joseph recognizes that the dreams are actually two parts of the same dream. And with God's help, Joseph provides an interpretation. He says that the seven good cows and the seven good heads are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and bad cows that come up after them are 7 years. And the thin heads blighted by the east wind are 7 years of famine. And notice how Joseph uses his adjectives. He describes the good cows and the good grain with the same adjective, good. And he describes the bad cows and the bad grain with the same adjective, thin. This accentuates Joseph's assertion that the two parts are one dream. Translating from one language into another can be very tricky, especially when words can have a broad semantic range and can be understood multiple ways. And sometimes if the Hebrew text uses the same word multiple times in a section, an English translator will want to provide nuance to the text by using different words in translation. However, the story of Pharaoh's dream is a perfect example that awareness of the original words is important, and changing them for literary effect can sometimes mask the intent of the writer. It's also interesting that after Pharaoh has his dreams, his spirit is troubled. The magicians and wise men fail because the Egyptian ways of knowing fail. When Joseph arrives, Pharaoh tells him that he has heard of him and his ability to interpret dreams, but Joseph clarifies that it's not in his power. It is God who will answer Pharaoh. Joseph isn't a magician. He doesn't claim any special power or ability. He points to God as the source. God is alive and speaks through dreams and visions. Joseph is able to interpret based on inspiration from God, because God is sovereign over every leader and every nation, including Pharaoh and Egypt. And Pharaoh must have recognized it, because after Joseph interprets Pharaoh's dreams, Pharaoh acknowledges that the Spirit of God is in him. Then he renames Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah, which means something to the effect of, God speaks and lives.